Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
We need to stand united, for undivided we shall never fall. Remember all, we need to trust in and then forever call on our brothers and our sisters. And are you and I aware? You and I both know that we can't rely on it. The time is prime, planets aligned, ain't no mistaking. For union resurrection, the anger has awakened. The sleeping giant, come on, yeah, we can do it. We need to revive, re-amp, and re-up the labor movement.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So this morning, the Donald jumped up, tweeting out a bunch of, hey, I'm going to Canada. I'm going to the G7. And then he tweeted out yesterday that, or really early this morning, that Canada charges the U.S. 270% tariff on dairy products. He says, they didn't tell you that, did they? Not fair to our farmers. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I don't know that that's how you go into a diplomatic meeting of choosing one thing and beating someone over the head. But here to share some thoughts on the G6 plus Trump summit, I've asked our good friend Dave Johnson to come talk with us. Dave is a former senior fellow at the Campaign for America's Future, also does tons of fantastic writing on trade-related issues. Dave, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So, the G6 plus Trump, thoughts?
Thoughts. The Trump approach sort of sounds like what a lot of us used to talk about, you know, steel and all those things like that.
Right.
Trump is, his approach, though, is so simplistic and it's essentially so backwards from the reality of how to deal with these things that it's hard to know where to begin. His basic complaint is that countries have been unfair to us, and he points to these trade deficits that you and I have talked about. But when you and I talked about it, we talked about how the trade negotiations were conducted more in favor of America's large corporations, and that that's where the middle class wages had gone to. The trade deficit with Canada, and I'm sorry, we'll get to Canada, but China, okay? And it's big.
It's enormous. It's in my view, the biggest problem we have as a country is our trade deficit with China.
Yeah, but look where it came from. American, let's just take a manufacturing plant. Closes down here, packs up all, fires all the employees, packs up the tools, that they manufactured with, takes them to China, where they have no environmental protections that are enforced, really. Very few labor protections, and people are paid squat. They take the same goods, they make the same goods there, they bring them back here, they sell them in the same stores, but now it's called trade because those goods cross a border. Americans have lost jobs. The Chinese people aren't particularly gaining at all because they're not paid hardly anything. They live in these bunkers, etc. But the American companies and the Wall Street investors are making out like bandits from that. And so they force other companies to do the same, and if you're going to compete, you have to do that. But it's not China particularly that is the problem as much as the trade deals that were negotiated in favor of these Wall Street and these big corporate investor types.
No, I agree with you on that, but here's the other part of this. You still have all of the Chinese mercantilist policy of currency manipulation and industry targeting and dumping and all of this stuff that plays into it as well.
Yeah, to keep that going, you bet.
So,
but it's facilitated by us. It's not that China is the particular culprit here. It's China, the billionaire class now of the Chinese leadership, in conjunction with the billionaire class of the American Wall Street investors. This has not been China taking advantage of us. This has been elements in China making deals with our own corporate trade negotiation process. That's where the problem didn't come from. China tricked us. You know, it's not like China tricked us.
Oh, no, I've never yeah. said China ever tricked us. Yeah. I've always said, look, you know, we used to make, when I was a kid, I had all kind of toys. They were all made in the U.S. I had a bicycle. It was made in the U.S. You know, basically everything I had growing up as a youngster was all made in the U.S. We still have those same products today.
Hey,
they're just made somewhere else. And
right.
it wasn't.
You're so right. You're so right. And that's the what they call the hollowing out of America's middle class. But the benefits from that, you know, our GDP grows, actually. They always say, oh, trade's good because the GDP grows, all that stuff. Well, wait a minute. This is very wealthy people in America are now pocketing those middle-class wages.
Right.
And some billionaires in China. So it's not that the Chinese, you know, if you want to lump them all together and say the Chinese tricked us and out-negotiated us. No, it was these trade deals have almost always been negotiated entirely in favor of the American corporate class that has, you know, what they call captured the process. So the idea that Trump says we've been tricked and we've been tricked and so we're going to go after these other countries is just simply the wrongest way to look at it, because the result then is that he shuts down a lot of the things that then still keep a lot of stuff here going. The way he hit steel, and we'll get to Canada and stuff in a minute, the way he hits those things is not particularly going to help here. It'll help a bit, but then on the other hand, the users of steel now have had to lay off tons of people and such.
Have we seen that? I know that's been the talking point, Dave, but have we actually seen that happen? Because, look, you know, you're talking such a small amount of increase in the steel cost. And the tariffs haven't even actually hit
right.
really yet. So,
Yesterday I was up talking to a guy who has a plumbing supply company, and he said about a minute after those tariffs were announced, all his suppliers raised their prices 25%.
Yeah, but that wasn't because inputs cost them any more. That's because they saw a good opportunity.
Of course. So what has happened, and remember how it was announced. It was just suddenly, this is what we're going to do. You know, there was no rollout. There was no planning. People in his own administration didn't even know he was going to do this.
Yeah.
Instead of having a process, a phase in, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so, I mean, it's good. We needed to do, especially the steel, you know, because of national security concerns.
Certainly.
As well. We have to rebuild our American steel manufacturing. But usually you would follow some kind of a process, and you'd do this and you'd do that. There would be a series of things, and you'd start getting people ready for it. Another example, I have a friend who has a solar company, installation, a big one. And this tariff thing is killing them, okay? Now, it might trigger, I mean, we really needed to do something about solar and start getting solar manufacturing back to the United States. But now they've thrown a monkey wrench into the entire solar installation process, including, you know, all the supplies that you build, the support things that you put the solar panels on and all of that,
right.
which are, you know, steel and aluminum and all of that. So,
instead of
phasing it in.
No,
and yes,
you know,
we are getting more solar panel manufacturing started slowly, but not enough and not fast enough.
Well, we tried that, you know, during the Obama years, and the Republicans all point to Solyndra, a huge failure. But
yep.
we tried to get the manufacturing done here. It's just that we allowed the Chinese to dump into our market. And the question then becomes for me is, you know, fine, you know, is the goal to have the cheapest possible products, or is the goal to have domestic consumption in domestic production? I mean, at some
right.
point, you've got
right.
to define
right.
what it is you're looking at. Because you're saying, you know,
right.
and I've had these discussions numerous times with people who say, well, you know, it's hurting this business because it's increasing the cost. And I go, okay, but if we made that stuff here to begin with, you would have those jobs here, you would have a supply chain, and you wouldn't be harming them. So how do you get, since we all agree our manufacturing base has been hollowed out, how do we get back to a point to where we are producing things and it is helping industry here to grow and thrive, like your friend who owns the solar installation company? How
yeah.
do you get from one to the other? Because there's going to be some frictional pain that we have to adjust to, I think, on some level.
But you can mitigate that pain is the point, and you can plan, and you can have a process. In fact, this is what Obama did try to do, was just try to have this process. He failed in a lot of ways, especially, you know, he wouldn't label China as a currency manipulator.
And
he
has Trump, which he was supposed to do day one.
Yeah, exactly. He promised he'd do it day one, and then he didn't. Yeah, Trump talks a good game.
No, I'm with you. You know, and at the end of this, you know, what you have to try and figure out how to deal with is how you move this forward. And you know, like I was saying here, the thing that's kind of frustrating is, you know, I keep hearing that same story over and over and over again. I keep getting hammered with that. Well, you know, you're hurting this producer, you're hurting that producer, and I'm going, well, or this installer, and I go, well, you know, maybe that's the case. But how do we get back that manufacturing? How do we claw that back? Steel production, for instance, to me is hugely important, because you have to have, you seriously have to have, you know, the capacity to produce steel if you're going to have a war machine. And we're a war society. We want war stuff. So how do you get to the point where you go, okay, you know, we're going to encourage domestic production of steel, and it might cost a couple of pennies more. We may have to pay a penny more for a six-pack. We may have to pay for, you know, an extra, you know, 10 cents for the stuff that you're going to use to put the solar panels on the roof. You may have to do that. But the reverberation effect of the jobs that are coming in that are being created by having that manufacturing base and not being dependent on a foreign nation, you know, to me is well worth it. And, Dave, I appreciate the thoughts. I think we lost him. This is another reason I hate cell phones. But, you know, you go down this and you look at the reality in all of this. And to me, the idea of having these tariffs, I've been talking about for years. Do I think Trump's going to do it right? No. I fear he boogers everything up. And I fear that, you know, in looking at what happens this weekend, and he's going to do nothing this weekend but tick off the other six and end up having it be a G6 with us looking in through the window. And at some point, again, I go back to, I agree with the idea. The way he's doing it to me is just nuts. This idea that you're going to go after Canada? Really? Is that the move? Even though we don't have I think we actually have a trade surplus with Canada. When China is the 800-pound gorilla in the room. And if you look at the amount, we're talking hundreds of billions of dollars in deficits. You know, the one time I actually sat down and I went back from when Clinton gave China permanent normal trade relation status, and I added up all of the trade deficit numbers. You know, just add up all of the trade deficits we've had, you know, not just with China, but all around the world. And interestingly enough, at the time when I did it, and this was back during the middle of the Obama years, interestingly enough, it was almost the same number that was our budget debt, the amount of money that, so we had basically deficited ourselves into debt. And you know, you go back to, I guess it was 1975 is when I went back to all of the trade deficits we've had going forward with the rest of the world. And it mirrored how much money we were in debt to ourselves and to other countries. Because at the end of this, you know, and this is one of those things that you have to understand, that the dollar is the reserve currency of the globe. Every dollar that's spent on an international item, that dollar has to come back here. So if we're buying widgets and whatnots and toys and trinkets and gadgets and all of that stuff from China or whoever, that money has to come back here in one form or another. So if it's buying our treasuries, if it's, you know, buying, you know, municipal bonds, you know, if it's you know, going through our banking system, you know, and propping up bad home loans, or if it's buying our companies and packing them up and shipping them back, that money has to come back. And it's one of the downsides of having the reserve currency. And you know, I've talked about this before. You know, back when all of this was set up, when, you know, the Bretton Woods Accord and the entire, you know, trade regime that we've been living under for the last 1944 was when the Bretton Woods Accord happened. When all that was set up and, you know, we demanded, we want the dollar as the reserve currency, John Maynard Keynes wanted a floating currency, wanted a global currency, called it, he wanted to call it the Bancor. And the idea was, is that you would have a leveling of trade. No one would have a surplus. No one would have a deficit. Surplus countries would pay the deficit countries, and you would have a leveling off. And that trade would be done the way it was meant to be done, that you traded for things that you couldn't produce. Not that you would have one producer country, and I know there's the rice and beans argument, but that not that you would have one producer country who produced everything. You would have balanced trade. And if you didn't, you'd have a country that had a massive deficit. Well, that country that had the massive surplus would be paying the deficit country so that you could have transfer payments to mitigate the negativity of job loss and of decline, because you need consumers. And they and Keynes understood this. You needed consumers. You needed people to buy stuff. So if you're in a country like we're in right now that's in a massive deficit, eventually at some point those deficits grow so large that you can't consume anymore. And the problem is that once that happens, now you gum up the entire system. You have oversupply. You end up in a depression. And I know that sounds really simplistic, but you know this is what happens when you have this kind of massive imbalance. And while I don't agree with what Trump is doing, how he's doing it, I agree that it has to be done. You know, I was really disappointed with Donald Trump in a lot of ways, in that, you know, just couldn't figure out how to get it done. I guess we got Dave back on the line. Dave, you there?
Yeah. I thought you'd call me, so I was waiting.
Yeah, so we
sorry. I don't know what happened.
Cell phones are horrible. So where were we? I wanted to finish up.
I wanted to answer. You said the thing about that deeper prices are not a justification for these trade deals. I got to agree with you so much. It's almost immoral to say that we get lower prices. But how many millions of people lose their jobs to get those lower prices? And then the jobs, as you were just saying, by the way, I was checking the live feed, the jobs, if you're not paid enough or if you don't have a job, you can't buy anything at any price anyway. So do you want to get to Canada at all?
Yeah, I do. I wanted to, that was the point of all of this, to get to the G6 plus one.
So Canada, here we are. I mean, trade war with Canada, and not just a trade war, but he's like really going after Canada, which is kind of shocking. I don't understand it. Nobody understands it. He goes after France. He goes after Germany. You know, his only friends are these strongman dictator types.
Of which he wants to bring Putin back into the G7.
That was shocking. I mean, I can't imagine how people there. The reasons that Putin was invited into the G7 as a courtesy, not because they have a major economy. Their economy is about, the size of Italy. Now, Italy was there. The guy had just been sworn in, this week or last week. But they were. That's why Putin was there. And then he annexes Crimea. You haven't heard the word annex since World War II, you know?
Yep.
And the behavior of the country, the oligarch kleptocracy system of theft and everything else was why they kicked him out. Trump says, let's bring him back in. No, you. What do you get from them? What concession on the things they got kicked out for do you get if you're going to bring Russia back in? You don't just bring Russia back in, you know? I mean, you get something for it. God, it makes me terrified of what's going to happen in Korea, Singapore.
No, I'm so, with you. The Hare Summit is...
Canada, going after Canada. So he complains that they have dairy, high tariffs on their dairy industry. Let's look at our American farming industry for a minute. One of the complaints that you and I have had about these trade deals has been that the American mega corporations, it enables them to just go start wiping everything out here and there. But, you know, they wipe the jobs out here, but they have these huge mechanized farms, and then you have a cultural attachment to certain things, like especially small agriculture in places like France. You know, Canada has family farms. Canada has dairies, okay? We have these giant mega monopoly situations with the GMOs, you know, the whole thing we do. we have already pretty much succeeded in wiping out America's family farms and farming culture.
Except when we want to talk about the estate tax.
Exactly. And the estate tax has never applied to a farm, but that's another story. Exactly. And so Canada wants to have, culturally and other reasons, a dairy industry in Canada. And if they let us just immediately come in, what would happen in Canada is what happened in northern Mexico to small family farms growing corn and stuff after NAFTA took effect. And what happened was our giant American corporations with our giant subsidies, you know, we subsidize dairy and corn and stuff, you know, a lot.
Yeah. You're not allowed to say that.
But what happened to Mexico was that we put so many of these northern farmers out of business, they had to find a way to make a living. You know what they started doing? Mass migration north.
Right.
Which is Trump's biggest complaint, right?
Yep.
Well, what are we going to do? What are we going to do to the small farms in Canada if Canada can't protect its cultural, you know, there's things that countries are proud of. And Canada is proud that they have these dairy farms, et cetera, you know, like Vermont and stuff. So that's an issue that isn't brought up here. And Trump focuses, as you said, on that one thing, the dairy. But we do not have trade problems with our largest trading partner in the world. And here comes Trump. And why? Usually trade is a congressional prerogative, okay? But Trump has taken over this, and he is kind of dictatorially imposing tariffs. And his justification with Canada, you know this, but and it's funny, was that national security reasons we have to slap huge steel tariffs and stuff on Canada, right? Does that really make sense? I mean, you know what Leo Gerard says about, wait a minute, Canada? Wait a minute, what are we doing slapping tariffs on Canada?
Yeah, that's because John Bolton said that Canada might bomb us in 100 years.
Yeah, right. But what Trump said was, well, you burned down the White House in the War of 1812. Well, actually, Canada didn't burn down the White House. England did before there was a Canada. And
details.
What would happen if you asked Trump what year was the War of 1812?
That's almost like asking someone who's in Grant's tomb.
Yeah, exactly. So justifying it on national security grounds, and it's like shocking how much he is trying to split apart America's alliances while saying we should be working with Putin and other dictators around the world, you know. So that's what I wanted to say about the situation with Canada.
Yeah,
and then look what we've done with France. He's in a public Twitter war. Well, never mind, by the way, publicly Twitter insulting the president, Prime Minister of Canada, he's insulting the President of France on Twitter and such, getting into these wars. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but this is just another day in 2018. I mean, there's nothing new here, nothing to see. Move along.
I know. And in an hour, we'll be talking about something else, you know?
So the trade situation. Right.
Trump talks a good game on trade.
Yeah.
Sure. It sounds like he's saying the right things, but the details kill us. And because he doesn't understand the details, I don't think.
Sure. He wants to win, and that's it. But, you know, the last question I want to get to, because, you know, you look at how disjointed everything is. And, you know, I'm guessing there's no NAFTA deal coming, you know, and all of this kind of chaos. I do think at some point the world does unite against us and in different factions. And that's not a good place to be in.
That's part of what it looks like is happening. Europe has started to say, you know, we're going to have to go on our own. They're starting to write us out of things. That includes intelligence sharing things and stuff, too. It's dangerous long term for us. That's part of what's happening. They tried to reach a consensus on a process or agreement on trade violations, and Trump blew it up today, for example. So they still say they're going to issue a joint statement, but Trump is leaving early to skip all of the environmental and climate discussion that they're going to have. So we'll see what comes out of it.
Yeah, I mean, how can he stay for that, honestly, in good conscience? How can he stay for the environmental part when you've got Scott Pruitt, who is doing everything he can do to take us back to the 60s and 70s?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
I mean,
So here we are.
It's really scary stuff.
It sounds good, but if you know what you're talking about and you go beyond the slogans, it's really scary.
Yeah.
I'm
sure that
I don't see us heading towards a better trade regime from this.
No, I don't either, but I'm sure the other six are happy he's leaving.
Well, one thing you should know, remember Fast Track and our big fight on Fast Track? Well, Fast Track expires. Trump's Fast Track authority expires, I believe it's July 1st. But it keeps going unless Congress issues a resolution opposing keeping it going. That's written into it.
Yeah, another one of those.
So if Congress if they really want to take over their proper role that Congress is supposed to have, like oversight and such, if they really wanted to take it over, all they have to do is those Republicans that are talking about, being for better approaches to trade, they're all for the wrong approaches, but at least they're talking about how Trump's nuts. they could just vote a resolution right now and say Fast Track expires. They could do that.
Again, another reason I was against Fast Track from the beginning anyway.
Yeah. What do you think the odds are they'll do that?
Yeah, so we'll see where it takes us. We'll see if the world ends on Monday, and we'll go from there. Dave, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on.
Always good talking to our good friend Dave Johnson. I'm sure the other six cannot wait for Trump to leave early, go play golf or whatever it is. I know he's not gonna prepare for the hair summit. He's already said he's as prepared as he's gonna be. It's about attitude. Wow. Right back. It seems to